Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz and joined as always by Lahav Harkov. And Lahav, I have to say, maybe a confession, but I'm a little bored with the Israeli elections and political news. It's just not interesting anymore. I mean, it's like, this guy's joining that woman, this woman's joining that guy, Gal'on is running against Golan, so they just switched the A and the O.
And it's very confusing reading about it in English, at least.
That's the Meretz party thing. Yes, BB, no BB. I don't know. It's like nothing new.
Yeah, I agree. It's been pretty boring. It's like only people who are like really obsessed, I think, are paying attention at this point.
Like us.
Like us.
We need to find something better to do. You know, yeah. Someone was telling me the other day that, you know, if you go work in high tech, you got to come with a hobby, right? Because high tech can be boring. So you need a hobby. So I said, oh, so that's why all these high tech people who I like have friends of mine who are in high tech are all cycling all the time. They're always wearing spandex and like riding bikes like across the country, doing bike races or running marathons or like. So it's like
my husband's in high tech.
Maybe we need to start biking.
Maybe.
And stop reading politics.
I was saying my husband's in high tech and his hobby is probably playing video games. I'm not really sure that's so different.
Well, that's bad. So. Yeah, there he goes. But again, he has a hobby, you see?
He does.
Right, because he can't be in high tech without the hobby. I think maybe journalists need hobbies. And then we'll stop having elections. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe
I'll take up crocheting again. Keep us for everyone in the office.
Yeah. But I mean, seriously, when will it get interesting? Just election day? Or is there going to be a point? Because now it's kind of the summer. It's hot. People are vacationing.
Yeah, I feel like maybe come September, then you'll have like a few weeks, and then we'll have the holidays and there'll be another lull. But this is an especially long election cycle. Usually they're about 100 days long, and this is like 130. I don't know the exact number, but more or less. And so we're still in those, like we just got to the point where we're 100 days before the election. And also, I think, so the Likud primary is in August. Mm-hmm. And as we get closer to the Likud primary, and we're already starting to see it a little bit, you see more and more like strange and colorful characters that run for Likud. And usually what happens is...
said jail or was convicted or something.
Yeah, or someone who was convicted of kidnapping a minor like 20 years ago. But I think that was the
Why
person.
Why am I laughing? Okay.
Yes. I think that was the person who the Likud actually sent out like a thing saying this person never registered to run in the primary. Mm-hmm. So hopefully. But the thing that happens with Likud is that there's always a lot of really nutty people who run, and then maybe one or two of them get in. They usually weed out like the biggest crazies, and it's only after they get to the Knesset that they become very loud, shouty people.
Well, I mean, one thing that we have seen is just some of the rhetoric that's been coming out of the Likud activist pool, I guess, yeah. Right? There was that one activist who on a space, what do they call space meetings? Like on Twitter, they have these space gatherings of where people can talk. And one of them said that he has a solution for the issue of the prosecution, because they're obviously Likud people are against prosecution because of the BB trial, or some of them are at least. And he said, yeah, I have an easy solution. It's a little radical, but you just take the prosecutors, line them up against the wall and bring a firing squad. Terrible, obviously, but
a lot of activists also just when Bennett was prime minister you had someone who was like a Netanyahu supporter who like mailed bullets to Bennett's house, right? Mm-hmm. And that was
a contribution. They wanted to contribute copper.
Sure. Right. I'd like to think like it's a party of like at this point, I think it's like 150,000 people.
So of course you're going to have your crazies.
Yeah, you're going to have your crazies.
But you had Ayub Kara, who used to be a minister and a former Knesset member, who said we should run over?
No, or? That was in Beit Yud. That was Moti Yogev.
No. But Moti Yogev was the guy who said we need to demolish, D9 the Supreme
right,
Court.
Right, to bulldoze it.
Ayub Kara said this week in Hebrew, Nirmoset Smolanim, Nidroset Smolanim,
we'll trample them.
Run them over, steamroll them, I don't know, whatever you want to say, the left-wingers in this country. The rhetoric is definitely escalating, and I think, you know, obviously that's going to happen. By the way, on the other side, you see Benny Gantz, who's launching a really aggressive campaign against Bibi.
Yeah. Right. And even like Lapid is like charismatic and well-spoken. So is Netanyahu. But even he, like in his speech where he took over as prime minister, he said something that Likudniks were very upset about, which is basically he called the opposition the forces of darkness, I think that was. And people didn't like it. Now, it's tame compared to death threats. But like when you have someone who's prime minister standing up and saying that, like, half the country practically are the forces of darkness. It's
well, I mean, it could be
not great.
I don't want to defend necessarily Pete, but maybe he watched like a Star Wars movie the night before and was thinking like, you know, the dark side or something.
Right. Or maybe he was bringing in, he was negotiating with the New Hope Party. That's a Star Wars movie.
Yeah. We can have a lot of fun with all this. The interesting thing I was thinking about also is how Friday, when many of you might be listening to our podcast, is the day that Yair Lapid will be marking 1 month in office, which is interesting in itself, mostly because when I look back at the last month, and I, you know, you obviously cover him much more closely than I do, things have been relatively quiet, right? You know, it's kind of like no drama, no big blow-ups all the time. I mean, there's, you know, the two big stories, if I could think of, since he's taken office. One was the Biden trip, the Biden visit, which he kind of inherited and played nicely with and only benefited from, and he's gotten actually a bump in the polls. They all show him now. If he was polling at 20 seats, now he's at 23, 24. Right. And I don't know if that was a direct result or just him being prime minister. But the other thing is now we have the Jewish agency problems in Russia, which we'll talk about in a moment. But besides for that, it's been quiet, right? I mean, it's like, you know, he's not in the news all the time. He's not speaking. Not a million photos of him everywhere. It's like a different style.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a different style. He's not out there doing a million photo ops. He did go to a military base up north and like flew on a helicopter to see the gas rig that Hezbollah has been threatening to attack.
The Karish.
Yeah. So that he did do that. But it seems like he's settling in.
Is it possible that this is a strategy of his, though, is to keep things quiet, just show people I can be prime minister and not rock the boat?
Well, first of all, I think he's doing a lot of things diplomatically, which are, they're not necessarily diplomatically significant, but he's having a lot of phone calls with a lot of different leaders. And
we're recording on Wednesday afternoon. He had just came out that he met with King Abdullah.
Met with King Abdullah today.
From Jordan.
Which actually could be significant because they discussed two projects. One is like a water and energy project and one is a shared industrial park, which Bennett had put on hold in April after the prime minister of Jordan basically said that he supports Palestinians who throw rocks at Jews on the Temple Mount. And Lapid was mad about that too. And
good
he said
friend.
So at the time. Yeah, great friend of Israel. So, I mean, we know with Jordan that it's peace between leaders and not between the people. But in this case, like, the prime minister is a leader too. He might want to watch his mouth a little. So anyway, they're discussing that plan that was just put on hold a few months ago. So that could end up being diplomatically significant. But what I was thinking about is, like, the night before we talked, he talked to Boris Johnson, who he's known for a long time, has been friendly with, and sort of wished him luck on his future endeavors, and talked with like the head of the European Commission. And it's possible that they discussed important things, but it seems like he's just having all of these, you know, phone calls so that we can say that Lapid is prime minister talking to all the world leaders.
But the big challenge for Lapid is what's happening with the Jewish agency, and they've received this letter from the Justice Ministry in Russia that is asking them to potentially, or ordering them to potentially shut down their activities. So Lahav, where do things stand on that?
Russia has been cracking down on foreign NGOs for a few years now. And the Jewish agency was not an exception. It had gotten like letters and already years ago that they wanted to see their funding, that the Jewish agency, it's not legal for them to gather information about Russian citizens and things like that. But there's been an escalation in recent weeks, and it's included all kinds of things, including, you know, Russian police coming into the offices and looking at their documents and their computers.
Right.
It's included phone tapping. Our reporter, our Jewish World reporter, Tzvika Klein, has sources who said that in the middle of conversations, Russian intelligence offices have just interrupted their calls and says this conversation is illegal.
That doesn't happen to you, Lahav?
No, no. Though Google does tell me sometimes that state actors are trying to get into my account, but that's a different
that
story.
The other day,
yeah, it happens to me every couple of years. But anyway, you know, not pleasant things happening with the Jewish agency. And we should say, for those who don't know, like, the primary job of the Jewish agency in a place like Russia is to help people who want to move to Israel move to Israel, and then they also encourage,
foster Jewish life. Though.
Yes,
right.
Yes,
they're in charge of summer camps and community centers. I mean, it's much more.
Right.
Than just Aliyah to Israel.
Right. But it seems that the Aliyah part, the immigration part, is what's bothering the Russians.
Right.
And the fact that in order to do that, they have to collect information about these people and give that information to the Israeli government.
So we have a really good interview coming up with Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, who's the chief rabbi of Moscow, who's in exile now, right? He had to leave Moscow. Lahav and I spoke to him. He's also the president of the Council of European Rabbis, big organization of rabbis. And one thing that he told us in the interview, which I found very interesting, is how, if you look at least at the optics, this is all happening since Lapid came into office as prime minister. Lapid was the person, you had asked him about it, Lapid was the person who criticized, was more critical when the war broke out. When he was foreign minister, Bennett was prime minister, he was the bad cop with Russia. Does Lapid at all recognize that that maybe was a mistake back then?
The prime minister's office is trying to downplay this, and Russia officially is trying to downplay it too. Mm-hmm. But I think that it may be not related to Lapid specifically, although the timing is interesting.
Right.
But I think in general, Russia doesn't like that Israel is sort of siding with the West on Ukraine, which again is interesting because I think not government so much as just like public perception. Like people have criticized Israel as not being aligned with the West enough because Israel isn't helping with military aid. Like the view in Israel, or of the government at least, is that Israel can send as much humanitarian aid as it wants. It built a field hospital. It's even sending protective vests and helmets to like emergency services in Ukraine. But military would cross a line with Russia. That would be a problem when it comes to Syria, because Israel strikes Iranian targets in Syria and Russia doesn't like it, but they get out of the way.
Yeah, basically. They don't stop him.
Right. And they get out of the way so that Russians don't get hurt. So there's a benefit to them. But anyway, so it's hard to imagine, first of all, like in a fairly authoritarian country like Russia, that the justice ministry is acting without, you know, the Kremlin knowing, and that the timing is a coincidence.
Rarely are things just coincidences, I feel, in these types of stories, but we'll find out. And because if you were worried that things weren't bad enough, Hezbollah has threatened to attack Israel, right? So there's always that story that you could focus on.
Nasrallah says that he has missiles that could reach anywhere in Israel, which. Right. So just I believe him.
Right. I think he's telling the truth. He does have missiles, and the army openly admits that. But just if you thought it can't get worse. So, you know, that's my friendly reminder.
Right. And this is all over gas, basically. I mean, you know, in general, Hezbollah wants to destroy Israel. But this is most recently because there's a conflict between, like, a longstanding conflict between Israel and Lebanon about where the maritime border between the countries is. And right. Israel has started developing a gas reservoir, Karish, that abuts that border. And Hezbollah has been threatening to attack it.
You know, I've always been of the opinion, though, that our enemies don't really need reasons to attack us.
Totally.
Like, you know, it takes me back to that time of the last Gaza operation when everyone said, oh, it was because of the Temple Mount, or it was because of the parade, you know, on Jerusalem Day. Sorry, that's bullshit, right? It's Hamas. It just needs an excuse. Doesn't need an excuse. Here's one that we can use now as the trigger. Let's use that. Hezbollah, oh, it's the gas field. Let's use that. We'll wait to see what happens. But in the meantime, stay tuned for this great interview with Rabbi Goldschmidt. Really very somber, slightly depressing of what's happening to the Jews of Russia. News. Here he is, Pinchas Goldschmidt, rabbi in exile of Moscow. So there's a lot of news coming out of Russia right now, and especially the relationship and the continued operations of the Jewish agency in the country. It's a pleasure to have with us Rabbi Pinchas Goldschmidt, who is the chief rabbi of Moscow in exile. He is no longer in Russia because of different situations that are taking place there, and maybe the rabbi will explain to us what happened. And he's also the president of the Conference of European Rabbis, which is a large organization that brings together rabbinical figures and Jewish leaders from all across Europe to deal with the issues that Jewish communities are facing there. So Rabbi Goldschmidt, it's great to have you on the Jerusalem Post podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm curious, first of all, if, you know, just focusing for a moment on the Jewish agency situation, how do you understand what's happening there? Why is the Jewish agency facing these troubles and these challenges? And can there be a solution to what's going on?
It is not a simple question, and therefore there's also no simple answer to that. It is not the first time that the Jewish agency has faced problems in Russia. Actually, in 1995, in the end of 1995, there were attempts to close offices of the Jewish agency in different parts of the country, and one office after another was closed by the security services, and the ambassador of Israel at that time, Ambassador Liza Shinhar, asked me for my help. And I was very much involved in getting the Jewish agency back on track. Tom Pickering, the American ambassador at that time, was very helpful. And what we found out basically was that the foreign minister, Mr. Yevgeny Primakov, was basically the person behind the decision to make life difficult for the Jewish agency. And the Jewish agency at that time, we came to an understanding with the authorities, had to re-register as a local organization, as the Jewish agency of Russia. So since then, there were periods where there was also some more scrutiny and the agencies faced problems, but nothing as dramatic as happened during the last few days. To explain exactly what happened and why it happened, you know what Winston Churchill said about Russia, it's an enigma within in the Pandora's box. So it is sometimes very difficult to really know what the exact reason is. But in general, I would say in Russia, especially since the war against Ukraine started on the 24th of February, there was a crackdown on all parts of civil society, the rest of the free media, and especially international organizations have been under greater scrutiny and have been seen as objects of great suspicion by the state. And the question is really the other way around. How come the Jewish agency was able to work and exist till now? On the other hand, what we have to know is that what has been extremely extraordinary is while the relationship between Russia and the West has gone from bad to worse, especially since 2014, since the annexation of Crimea and the attacks in the Donbass, and there's been a very isolationist, anti-Western, and anti-American rhetoric coming out of Russia. At the same time, the relationship with Israel state was still good. And with Bibi Netanyahu at the head of the government and had a direct line, many phone conversations with President Putin. And anti-Semitism actually was not part of this whole avalanche of anti-Western rhetoric. And what happened is that with the beginning of the war against Ukraine on the 24th of February, Israel, on one hand, has refrained from joining the Western sanctions against Russia, still continues to have flights from Tel Aviv to Moscow. On the other hand, today's Prime Minister Lapid, foreign minister, voiced very strong criticism of the invasion. So I see this as part of the Russian government showing its discontent with, I would say, with the lack of total support for the Russian position.
This has come together, right, with, as you were saying, a lot of anti-Western measures and anti-Western sentiment. Some in Israel have interpreted this as Russia trying to prevent a brain drain, that people with academic degrees and marketable skills are all trying to leave Russia, and that they feel like a sizable number of those people are Jewish. To me, that sounds a little bit like a denial of Russia going back to just old tactics and strategies of anti-Semitism and using sort of anti-Semitism for various political means. But I would like to know what your take is on that.
The Jewish agency was never a very popular organization with the Russian government, as I've said before. And brain drain is definitely a problem Russia is dealing with, especially now as we entering the fifth month of the war, We know of over 100,000 IT specialists left Russia. And maybe this also is a reason why the Jewish Agency have become maybe even less a desirable organization than before. But what I have said is that the main reason people leave Russia today, whether Jewish or not Jewish, is it has because of the isolation, of the lack of seeing a better tomorrow, and the dire political and economic situation, also because of the result of sanctions. So the main reason why people want to leave is not because of the Jewish Agency propaganda to move to Israel. The main reason is the war. Now, if the Jewish Agency would not exist, I'm sure that actually most the people who want to leave to Israel would be able to leave to Israel. It would be more difficult, and they would have to process everything maybe online or once people arrive in Israel. But it is not because of the propaganda or the outreach effort of the Jewish Agency that people, so many people, and we're talking, I don't know, I heard a number today which I was not even prepared to hear it. Yeah, we're talking about a little bit under 20,000 people who officially moved from Russia to Israel and applied for Israeli citizenship. However, the number is much higher, and there are many people who, in Russia, who had already Israeli citizenship, who moved to Israel as well. And I heard that the number is 51,000 during the last 4 months, which is an extraordinary number.
That is a big number.
Right.
So, Rabbi Goldschmidt, your personal story was you left Russia in March, just about 2 weeks after the outbreak of the invasion of Ukraine. Your daughter-in-law at the time, a journalist who some of our listeners might know, Avital Chizik Goldschmidt, based in New York, said at the time that you had been pressured to support the war publicly and you had declined to do so. So I am curious if you could, as much as you're comfortable saying, what exactly happened and why are you now in exile?
For years, as the regime has become more authoritarian, it was possible to live in Russia and not mixing in politics and just conduct your daily life, whether it's religious or secular, without having too many problems with the authorities. But what of the cardinal changes with the onset of the war has been that the authorities demand that individuals and people employed by the government, but also religious organizations, support morally that the war against Ukrainians. So there was pressure put on the community, and I believe also in other communities, to officially support the war, which we declined to do.
Do you think that you'll be able to go back to your community in Moscow? Or do you think that we're approaching a total change in Jewish life in Russia after, you know, 30 years of it improving relatively?
I think Russia today is a total different country than it was before the 24th of February, unfortunately. And since refusing to support the war, I've also come out explicitly against the war. Actually, the fact that I'm describing this as a war is already against Russian law, as the laws passed recently. And anyone who is coming out officially against the war can today expect to be arrested and sentenced to long prison terms. So I think that it would not be the best idea for me to return to Russia today. However, as a Jew, I have to be an optimist, and I believe that the day will come when I will be able to return as well.
So you're not there physically, but I'm sure you're talking all the time with members of the community. You were there for 30 years or so as a chief rabbi and a leading member of the Jewish community in Russia, and particularly in Moscow. What do you hear from them? I mean, you know, people tend to look, the number that you mentioned, for example, of 20,000, that's the official number that the Jewish Agency and the government has been putting out of people from Russia, who have made aliyah to Israel since the beginning and the onset of the war. And it's interesting because people were thinking, oh, it's Ukraine that they're fleeing from. But actually, a lot of Jews are fleeing from Russia. So what are you hearing from the Jews there? I mean, are they really, besides for the political level, which is kind of, I guess, what you're describing, what is Jewish daily life looking like?
The good news is that Jewish daily life in the different communities and synagogues and schools is continuing. However, many have left. And just mentioning, repeating the numbers we have mentioned before, this, of course, weakens the community, both in terms of numbers and also economically. And from what I understand, many of the communities and institutions are in a dire financial situation and need a lot of help.
What do you think of what the state of Israel could potentially do? Is there more that Israel, I mean, you know, obviously Israel's trying to fight this justice ministry sentence to the against the Jewish agency or this court order that might be coming and it's shut down. But is there more that Israel as a government, as a state, as a country, that Israelis as a people could potentially do to help the Jews of Russia?
I think that Israel today can do much more than other countries. If in the past, say more than 20 years ago, the United States was able to do a lot to help Russian Jews and had influence over the government, I think that in today's political situation of war and sanctions, the input or influence the West, especially the United States, has over what's happening inside of Russia is extremely limited. However, Israel, thanks to its wonderful bilateral relations and also certain common interests in fighting terrorism and cooperation on many different levels, I think that Israel is in the position to guarantee the well-being of the Jewish community in Russia. And I think that the current prime minister, as well as the past prime minister of Israel, have made this have said this very openly, that the security of the Jewish community in Russia is on the top of the agenda of the Israeli government.
Do you think it's a problem that Lapid has spoken out against the war in Ukraine? Do you think that, like, his specific statements and actions had something to do with this, the sort of the situation escalating recently?
It seems to be that that what happened to the Jewish agency had to do with the ascent of Mr. Lapid to the prime ministership. I cannot say for sure, but this what the optics look like. And Israel finds itself in a very difficult position regarding this Russian-Ukrainian war, because on one hand, Israel is a part of the West, is an ally of the United States, and its values, and I would say the sympathy of the people, are with the victims. On the other hand, Israel has the interest of the Jewish community there, as well as Syria and other issues with Iran there. So there's a very fine line to be walked there. And I truly hope and pray that the Israeli government is going to find the right way of dealing with the situation.
Well, Rabbi Goldschmidt, we thank you very much for joining us. It's somber, but it's, I guess, a very realistic portrayal of what's happening. You know, people tend to think of these wars as if they're just fought between militaries and leaders. But here is a real-life look at the impact it's having on people and the fact that you're now in exile and have had to left Russia under pressure, and just what's happening with the Jewish community there is heartbreaking. And we hope that things will only get better. Bezrat Hashem, please God.
Thank you, Yaakov, and thank you, Lav, for having me at the podcast of the Jerusalem Post. It's a great honor. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Jerusalem Post podcast. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, if you enjoyed it, you can forward this to your friends and family and give us a high rating on Apple Podcasts.